a member of the executive committee of the Western Galilee College, and he was educated to a Doctor of Philosophy from Oxford, as well as holding the rank of Brigadier General in the Reserves. Thank you so much for joining us, Professor. A momentous day, and a day certainly for the history books, and a lot to talk about. But perhaps I could start off by asking you what we have seen over this weekend. What would you say was Israel's core objectives in these strikes? Because we heard from Netanyahu that his goal was to destroy Iran's nuclear program and its ballistic missile program. Do you think that that's the be-it and end and an end of the goal? Or do you think we are looking at something like regime change in Iran?
Well, good morning, Paula. It's a pleasure to be once again on Chai FM and speak to South Africans and South African Jewry in particular. Yes, indeed, Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu has declared two major objectives, which are part of what we call a preventive operation. But we also look at the name of the operation, Operation Rising Lion. And indeed, it is a hope that there will be a change in regime, that people will rise up against that regime. Specifically, that to remove the capability, the nuclear arsenal, the enrichment program, and the ballistic missile program is a temporary interim measure, unless you actually cut off the head of the serpent totally, that is the entire regime and its objectives to destroy Israel, it will not be a lasting just to remove that capability. So yes, there is a hope that there will be more than just that.
Why do you think Israel prioritized hitting Fordo? And obviously here I'm talking about the nuclear site that's deep in the mountain. Despite its heavy fortification, what impact could that have on Iran's nuclear timeline? And there's a lot of speculation about what's the next step. Will Israel involve the United States? Will it send in its own ground forces? What do you think about the whole Fordo situation?
The International Atomic Energy Agency, which is based in Vienna, which is the international authority responsible for all civilian uranium enrichment programs and civilian nuclear reactors worldwide, with the exception of the European Union, which has Euratom, identified over the last 4 weeks that Fordo was the site where the enrichment program had moved beyond civilian and into a military capability. And that same authority, an international authority, has identified that Iran was in breach of clauses of the international agreement which had signed the non-proliferation treaty. International community has identified Fordo as the site of a military nuclear program by Iran, entitling Israel to take measures against that in a preemptive military operation. Will that involve other countries? Well, yes. Unless Israel is 100% successful, Saudi Arabia, for one, will feel that it is threatened by such a nuclear operation. For example, the Sunni Shia Rift, and the United States and the other 19 members of the International Atomic Energy Agency, which voted as having identified that as a nuclear site, particularly, for example, Britain, will find that as threatening. The British Prime Minister is currently sending warplanes to the Middle East as a security measure. So we do see an escalation of other forces in the area, which may take military action if they feel that it is necessary, both for their direct security as well as in collaboration with the security arrangements they have with other countries, for example, Kuwait, United Arab Emirates, Oman, and so forth. So we are seeing the start of what can be a very lengthy operation against Iran.
Among the nuclear sites that have been targeted, Fordo, we've just been chatting about that, Natanz and Isfahan, which strike do you believe was the most strategically significant and why?
I think Fordo is the most strategically significant because that has been identified by the international authority. The other sites have uranium enrichment processes. So just taking out one does not end the program because they could move to use the second or third site. So all have to be removed. It's a preemptive military operation. And that is also why the ballistic missile program has been targeted. You can't just take away the uranium. You also have to take away the ability to deliver that. And as we have seen over the last 12 hours here in Israel, conventional warheads do have a massive impact. We've had three tragic events here in Israel where civilians have been killed. So the ballistic missile program is also and has been a target from day one of 7th of October. And the Houthis in Yemen have shown that as to be a significant thing as well. Conventional warheads, as well as nuclear, chemical, biological warheads, pose a significant threat to everyone.
And when we put those two together, how many sites are we looking at in Iran?
In addition to the cutting off the head of the serpent, the military commanders, the nuclear scientists, Israel, since the early hours of 13th June, Friday morning Israel time, has already targeted and destroyed hundreds of sites.
Are we getting a question in from one of the listeners saying, can you please ask why Israel has not used its Jericho missiles, which are capable of carrying massive warheads? The Jericho is used to launch satellite into orbit. Surely it's time to use more powerful weapons against the monsters in the IRGC and the Ayatollahs.
I wouldn't say the use of missiles, Jericho or any other, is any way more powerful than what the Israeli Air Force can deliver. Let's look at what we can call as tonnage, a weight ton, that essentially an aircraft can deliver anywhere between half a ton and maybe even up to 8 tons of armaments in one strike. What one missile can deliver is the same. So the aircraft can return for a second strike within 2 or 3 hours, but the missile, that's it, it's delivered it. I don't know why the listener particularly targeted or mentioned Jericho missiles, because we also have submarine capability. Although we might have anywhere between 50 or 200 Jericho missiles, we probably have between 800 and 1,000 nuclear-capable submarine launched missiles from our submarines, which could deliver the same type of tonnage. So I think we also have to consider the fact that we have more than just aircraft, more than just Jericho, but I do believe our submarine fleet is in the preparedness as well. And that might well be on the horizon, should need be.
Professor, what are the strategic risks that Israel faces now, especially from a multi-front scenario?
We've been dealing with a 10-front, multi-front scenario since the 7th of October 2023, when the Hamas attacked. I think when we use the word strategic, we have to look more in terms of what is the outcome, the ramifications. What we can call is a geopolitical shift in the region or globally. And that geopolitical shift, I do believe, because of Iran's attack against Israel in April and October last year, because of its violation of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, is going to be a shift in the Sunni-Shia balance worldwide. And yeah, I do believe that Iran has made a very tragic mistake vis-a-vis the Shia Islam population worldwide. There will be a rise of Sunni violence against it. It's not just going to be confined to Iran. So we are going to see a strategic shift geopolitically in Sunni-Shia violence. As far as Israel is concerned strategically, we are here to remove any potential threat, irregardless of what that is, that faces the state of Israel, the Jewish population worldwide, whether it is direct confrontation, preventive, or preemptive strikes. And as Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu mentioned after the 7th of October attacks, we will find everyone responsible for that. And that includes the Air Force commanders of Iran, who were assassinated over the last 48 hours. They were involved and they have paid that price. Others should be aware of that as well.
Professor, you talk about the geopolitical shift. We did receive a report not so long ago this morning, that several transport planes from China have landed in Iran. And there are reports that Russia is expressing its support, obviously, for Iran. So beyond the Sunni-Shia violence that you talk about, how do you see the politics of the region unfolding? Not that this is anything new vis-a-vis Russia and China, but does it herald in a more tense situation?
I think we've been seeing agreements unfolding in the same way as we saw North Korean troops assisting Russia in Ukraine. We are seeing the payment by Iran to its suppliers for whatever spare parts or new weapons that are required. And those contracts are coming into force. China is now delivering the goods that were paid for and were ordered in the same way as North Korea delivered its troops to Russia, in the same way as Iran supplied the suicide drones to Russia to be used against Ukraine. This is basically things which have gone on for centuries, the same way as we could say in the First World War, J.P. Morgan both provided weapons to both sides while America was neutral, resulting in the antitrust laws, and he was a banker. So I think we are basically just seeing business as normal in what we call the Iron Triangle, military, industry, and government. Nothing new, as you say. It is simply business as usual, and money speaks, unfortunately, in terms of military-industrial complexes.
Money certainly does speak. I've always found the most strangest alliances when it comes to war, but what motivates them, as you say, money speaks. That was Professor Glenn Siegel, who is a NATO-EU Strategy Group member, a fellow of the Royal Geographical Society, a member of the Executive Committee of the Western Galilee College, and is a Doctor of Philosophy and holds the rank of Brigadier General Reserves, giving us that update and that insight. Professor, thank you so much for chatting with us. And we go from one professor to another. A familiar voice here on Hi FM is Dr. Mordechai Kedar, an Israeli scholar of Arab culture and a lecturer at Bar-Ilan University. Dr. Kedar is also a former IDF military intelligence officer specializing in Syria, Arab political discourse, Arab mass media, Islamic groups, and Israeli Arabs. Dr. Kedar, thank you so much for chatting with us again. From a military doctrine perspective, how coordinated do you think this past weekend has been vis-a-vis Israeli cooperation with the United States? Is the U.S. involved?
Behind the scenes, apparently the Americans knew about something which is supposed to happen, because on Friday morning, one of the newspapers here quoted Trump saying that big things will happen during the coming few days. So apparently he knew that Israel is intending to hit Iran. Yet I'm not sure that the timing was totally coordinated with the Americans.